Look at Judges 4, look at verse 1. And we keep pointing out in Judges, there's no new thing under the sun. Judges 4, verse 1, kind of looks like reading something you already read before, and it's kind of a little bit different, but kind of the same, you know. But he says in verse 1, the children of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord when Ehud was dead. And the Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan, that reigned in Hazor, the captain of whose host was Sisera, which dwelt in Harosheth of the Gentiles. And the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, for he had 900 chariots of iron. In 20 years he mightily oppressed the children of Israel. Like I said here, it almost looks like you're reading something all over again. Verse 1, now the children of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord. So, I mean, you get that by now. It's almost kind of like, you ever hear a joke, and a joke gets told again, and you're like, oh, come on, I am sick to death. That's what this is right here. It's the same thing. Like, haven't you learned enough? And obviously they haven't. And so what it says is, and the Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan. And you saw this again. Like I said, it's all just kind of repeating. It says, the Lord sold them in the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan. We read in chapter 3, verse 8, therefore the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hand of Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia. So it's God. Sold them into the king of Mesopotamia's hands. Harry sold them into the king of Canaan's hands. Chapter 3, verse 12. And the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord strengthened Eglon, the king of Moab, against Israel, and because they had done evil in the sight of the Lord. And like I said, no new thing under the sun. And that's a, you know, we've talked about it. And then it says here in verse 2, and the Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan, that reigned in Hazor, the captain of whose host was Sisera, which dwelt in Harosheth of the Gentiles. So, who's the oppressor? I'll just tell you, by the way, people that remember the book of Judges, I'll tell you who everybody remembers in the book of Judges is Sisera. You know, we didn't read it yet. You probably remember the story. Remember J.L., this woman, you know, puts a tent stake through his head while he's sleeping in a tent? Everybody remembers Sisera. Sisera's not the, I mean, he's the captain who serves the king. He is, it says, and the Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan. Now what you have here, and we'll see it more as we go through Judges 4, you have this picture of the Antichrist and the devil. You know, Sisera's the Antichrist, everybody's kind of focused on, but really, who's the guy behind the guy? Well, it's Jabin, king of Canaan. You know, who's the guy behind the Antichrist? The Antichrist gets all the attention. Who's the guy behind them? You know, it's the devil. And that's the real problem, is the power behind the guy that's, you know, showing up and oppressing you. And notice something else as far as this guy being a type of the Antichrist. Look at what we've seen so far. Look at chapter 3, verse 8 again. You see something a little bit different going on. Therefore, the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hand of Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia. Where does Cushan-Rishathaim come from? Way over there in Mesopotamia. And we talk about that. They're going back. Abraham left Mesopotamia a long time ago. Now here comes this guy from all the way over there to oppress him again. And in chapter 3, verse 14, it says, so the children of Israel served Eglon, the king of Moab, 18 years. Who is Eglon the king of? Moab. Moab, the Moabites got their own land. Remember that? They weren't supposed to take the land of the Moabites. That's Lot's descendants. And so here's another guy, Eglon, coming from another land. Now here's this guy, as far as him being a type of Antichrist, it says that the Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan, that reigned in Hazor, the captain of whose host was Sisera, which dwelt in Harosheth of the Gentiles. See this guy, Jabin, he's the king of Canaan. What's the promised land? Another word for the promised land is what? Is Canaan. Here's the land they're in, and here's this guy, he reigned in Hazor. He's in the land. The Antichrist is going to come from the land someday. And by the way, here's the second king of Jabin. Here's the second king Jabin from Hazor. It's Joshua 11. They ran out a guy, got rid of a guy, Jabin, who reigned in Hazor. And I'll just tell you, we went through Nehemiah, we didn't go through this, but when the children of Israel go back, you know, after their captivity, they go back with Zerubbabel, you know, and Ezra, and this guy goes with them back to the land. It's Ezra 2:13. And then the children of Adonikim, 666. So here's the guy that goes back out of the captivity and lives in the land, and he's got 666 people with him. Anybody know the number 666? You've heard that number before? And I should look it up. I think Adonikam, I think it means Lord of Rebellion, I think. I have to look that up. I'm like 99% positive without looking it up. It's Adonikam means the Lord of Rebellion. So here's, you know, the point being is, here's this guy, I think he's the Lord of Rebellion, goes back with 666, just by sheer coincidence, this guy's got 666 people with him. And goes back to the land. Incidentally, this kind of like, you know, everybody knows I'm not good with numbers. You know, the Jews get their land in 1948. I have to count them. How many years ago was that? 71 years now, right? Might have been 71, or no, 69 years. 69 years. So probably sometime in that, when they go back, I'm assuming the Antichrist is with them there in the land. You know, maybe I'm not right, but it's, like I said, it's been 69 years, and you start counting, you know, figuring stuff out. You know, I don't know, that's sort of, when I try doing numbers, everybody knows I get confused, and my brain hurts, and I start drooling on myself, and, you know. But anyways, here's this guy, though, Sisera, he is a type of Antichrist, and he serves a king, and they're both in the land already. You know, that's something to point out. And there's something else, though, by the way. Look at Judges 3, verse 8 again. It says, therefore the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hand of Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia. And the children of Israel served Cushan-Rishathaim 8 years. See, they serve him 8 years, right? And then chapter 3, verse 14. So the children of Israel served Eglon, the king of Moab, 18 years. So they served Eglon, the king of Moab, 18 years. And we talked about the different numbers before, 8. Now they're serving 18 years. And you get to Judges 4, verse 3. And the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, for he had 900 chariots of iron. And 20 years he mightily oppressed the children of Israel. So there's 20 years, a little bit longer than 18 years, substantially longer than 8 years. But Cushan-Rishathaim, they served him for 8 years. Eglon, they served him for 18 years. Now here's a guy that mightily oppressed them for 20 years. What I get from that is, this guy's worse than the two guys that came before him. Not only is he there oppressing him longer, you see the difference between serving him 18 years and mightily oppressing him for 20 years. There's a big difference. This guy, I think, is a whole lot worse. Like I said, I think he's a type of Antichrist. Everything the Jews have been through, you know what that all is? It's all kind of a warm-up for what's coming. You know, you thought Hitler was bad, you know, you ain't seen nothing yet, kind of a type of deal. And that's what this is showing you. This guy, this type of Antichrist, he mightily oppresses him. 20 years. Now I'll show you something. Look at Judges 6, and it's not the one-time thing. Look at Judges 6, look at verse 1. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian 7 years. And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel, and because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made them the dens which were in the mountains and caves and strongholds. Again, it's 7 years, but they're not mightily oppressed. God delivered them into their hands, and they prevailed against them. You know, I still think Sisera and Jabin are worse than the Midianites when they show up. In chapter 10, verse 6, just to show you, it's not a fluke in Judges 4. I mean, I think this guy really is the worst guy that comes upon him, you know, in this time of Judges here. Judges 10, verse 6 says, and the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord and served Balaam and Ashtoreth and the gods of Syria and the gods of Zidon and the gods of Moab and the gods of the children of Ammon and the gods of the Philistines and forsook the Lord and served not him. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hand of the Philistines and into the hands of the children of Ammon. And that year they vexed and oppressed the children of Israel 18 years, all the children of Israel that were on the other side Jordan in the land of the Amorites, which is in Gilead. So they're vexed and they're oppressed, but again, it's not mightily oppressed. Just showing you the difference, you know, hopefully you get that. Now, I'll show you, and you know this, look at Matthew 24, verse 21. Matthew 24, verse 21, the verse I think you know, but what it says here, for then shall be great tribulation. It's not just tribulation. In the world you shall have what? Tribulation. Here it's work. Thank God you're getting out of here. You think you have problems now being saved, living in the world, and you haven't seen nothing. In the world ye shall have tribulation. You just got problems. But here, for then shall be great tribulation. Kind of like here, the Antichrist shows up, you know, this Sisera, they're not just oppressed, they're mightily oppressed. And it kind of puts that, what's the word, modifier on there, you know, giving you a degree of oppression, you know, meaning it's worse. And as far as that goes, for then shall be great tribulation such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. It's going to be bad for everybody, but the tribulation is the time of whose troubles in Jeremiah 30? In the time of Jacob's trouble, meaning, really, it's bad on everybody, but who's it all really aimed at? We just look not too long on Hosea, you know, that after 2 days, then they'll call upon me. You know, they'll acknowledge their sin and call upon, you know, we just looked at that not too long ago. But yeah, it is the time of Jacob's troubles. And we just talked last week about that evil day in Ephesians 6, saying, you know, thinking possibly maybe that's just the worst day of your life. You know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But, you know, I think so far, these two show up, this Jabin, king of Canaan, and his captain Sisera. So far, in Judges, they're the worst oppressors they've had. Well, you thought the Moabites were bad and the Mesopotamians were bad. You ain't seen nothing. Wait till this guy gets here. He's worse than the other two guys. And then here's the thing to think about. You know, this is the worst oppressor they've had. You know, the Mesopotamians came, Cushan-Rishathaim. Why did he come in the first place? Well, you know why. You don't have to guess. I mean, we just read it over and over and over again since we've been going through Judges. It says in Judges 3, verse 8, he says, therefore, the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel. Therefore, why? The children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and forgot the Lord their God and served Balaam in the groves. Therefore, the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them in the hand of Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia, and the children of Israel served Cushan-Rishathaim 8 years. Why did it happen? Well, they did evil. God told them a long time ago, Deuteronomy 28, you do good, things will be good. You do bad, boy, they'll be real bad. And we've talked about before. Deuteronomy 28, most of that whole, that's a big long chapter, most of it saying, if you do bad, you are really going to be sorry for it. You know, that's paraphrase, but you get it. So why does this oppressor come? Well, God brought them because they did wrong. We talk about thy rod and thy staff, they come from you. We talked about that as we went through Judges. Look at Judges 3, well, you get the way it goes. This other guy comes, Eglon, king of Moab. Why does he come? And you get the idea. Children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord. And the Lord strengthened Eglon, the king of Moab. Now here comes Jabin, king of Canaan, with his captain Sisera. Why does he show up? And the children of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord when Ehud was dead. And the Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan, that reigned in Hazor, the captain of whose host was Sisera, which dwelt in Harosheth of the Gentiles. So the thing to think about is, here's the worst oppressor that they've seen yet. And the point being is, he mightily oppressed them for 20 years. I think, as of yet, in Judges 4, this is the worst thing they've seen. Probably since Pharaoh. Well, I know since Pharaoh. And the point being is that they brought this on themselves. After twice, God brings the Mesopotamians, God brings the Moabites, and you do it again. You know, there's an old joke, and I probably shouldn't tell it to you because it's off color. But it just, this really brings it to mind. I'll tell you in the car on the way home. So, but anyways, you know, the point being is, here's the worst thing that comes their way. And imagine living with that. The worst thing to happen to you was self-inflicted. Because that's what this is right here. They're mightily oppressed, and they brought it on themselves. We've talked over and over, keep saying in Judges. None of this stuff had to happen in Judges. This is the way it was, but not the way it should have been. Until you'll get to the judgment seat, you'll suffer loss when God will show you. This is how things were. If you'd have just done right, this is how it would have been. And you will suffer, the Bible says, loss. And here it is. 20 years, they're mightily oppressed with this guy they brought on themselves. And that's really worth getting. And that's really something terrible to have to live with. Not only is this thing happening to me, this thing's happening to me because I'm an evil nitwit that keeps doing the same thing over and over again. And I just don't get, after two times, I'm doing it again. And God's bringing this on. That's something, you know, people have to live with. That's something a lot of people have to live with. And I'll tell you something, that's something a lot of saved people have to live with. And if you're not careful, that's something you might end up having to live with. And don't tell yourself, well, I'll be all right just because I'm saved. It doesn't matter if you're saved. I'll just tell you, these are God's people in the Old Testament. And here's the worst thing that happens to them. They brought it on themselves. And you are what? Well, you're just God's people right now in the New Testament. So if his people in the Old Testament can bring this on themselves, why would you be dumb enough to think you couldn't bring it on yourself in the New Testament? I'll ask you, here's a good question. What is the Bible, how does the Bible describe David? He's a man what? He's a man after God's own heart. What do you think the worst thing to happen to David was? When he had a little baby die, you think that was the worst thing to happen to him? Maybe. He had his boy raped his daughter. You think that was the worst thing to happen to him? I don't know. Maybe. His other boy killed that boy. You think that's the worst thing to happen? I don't know. Then that boy decided he's going to kill David and be the king himself. Maybe that's the worst thing. I don't know. The point being is, any one of those things could very easily be the worst thing ever happened to him. Why did all of those things happen to him? He's a man after God's own heart in all these things, which you could, I'm sure one of those had to be the worst thing that ever happened to him. All of those things he brought on himself. So don't think, boy, I'm saved. I can, your left foot. You know this. Look at Hebrews. I lost the verse. Look at Hebrews 12, verse 8. I know you know the verse. I know the verse. Somehow I just lost it while I was talking about stuff. Look at Hebrews 12, verse 7. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the father chasteneth not? What does that mean? You do bad. What father doesn't chasten the son? What do you read in the Bible? He that spareth the rod, what? Nope, it's not spoils. He that spareth the rod hateth his son. So the Bible version is a lot worse than that than the verse you hear on the streets. So God says, what son is he whom the father chasteneth not? And, verse 8, but if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons. And if you do wrong, God is obligated to straighten you out as a Christian, as a son. The point being is, you read this in Judges, here's this guy, the third time they're bringing something bad on themselves. I think it's the worst thing they're dealing with yet. Point being is, I think there's a warning in there. All this they keep bringing on themselves. Here's 20 years of being mightily oppressed that they bring upon themselves. Like I said, I think probably somewhere there's a warning. Look at Judges 4, verse 3. It says, and the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, for he had 900 chariots of iron. In 20 years, he mightily oppressed the children of Israel. Now, I'll tell you something. Don't be naive. Here's this guy. He's got 900 chariots. Is 900 chariots a big deal? You betcha it's a big deal. Now, I'll tell you, is 900 chariots a... They're not even chariots, by the way. They're 900 chariots of iron. I mean, these aren't the old, lousy wooden ones. These are good iron ones. But is 900 chariots of iron, is that a big deal for God? No, nothing's a big deal for God. We talk about this when we talk about Eglon, king of Moab. Remember what Eglon means? It means calf-like. I think this guy shows up, he's a little god. Little gods to God are nothing, but little gods for you, man, they can ruin your life. They can tear you up. That's what this is. 900 chariots of iron for God. God says, 900 chariots of iron, that's nothing. I made the whole universe. I spoke it all into existence. Why would 900 chariots of iron be a problem for God? They're not. But if you walk away from God, guess what? 900 chariots of iron, not a big deal for God. But you all by yourself, what do you do? Oh, now you're in a fix. And you get that. What chariots of iron do to a company of men? Everybody's seen, they got the spinning blades out on the wheels and everything. They plow through, a company of men. Blow you down. Like I said, what is a problem for the shepherd? Nothing. So, everything in the world is a problem for a sheep. A sheep all by himself on a hill somewhere, what happened? We looked at that just not too long ago in Ezekiel. What happens to him? One little sheep all by himself, he's eaten up real quick. You know, whoever ate up that sheep on that hill by himself, that would have been nothing for the shepherd. The problem is, that dumb sheep done left the shepherd a long time waves back. And now he's just, you know, he's just feed. Like I said, in Joshua, you know, Joshua's the best generation of Jews. In Joshua, they easily beat a guy named Jabin, a King Jabin who reigns in Hazor in Joshua 11. But here, Judges 4, they're not as close to God as they were in Judges or Joshua 11. So all of a sudden, the king of Canaan's, he find out, yeah, he's a pretty big deal for someone like me. He wasn't a big deal for God, but, you know, I ain't God. You know, you get that. And you'll see the chariots of iron are going to be dealt with. And children of Israel cried unto the Lord. It's kind of a spoiler. You know, they're going to be dealt with, but you can't deal with them. That's the first step in dealing with stuff like that. As the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, for he had 900 chariots of iron. In 20 years, he mightily oppressed the children of Israel. Look at verse 4. And Deborah, prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, she judged Israel at that time, and she dwelt under the palm tree at Deborah between Ramah and Bethel and Mount Ephraim. And the children of Israel came up to her for judgment, and she sent and called Barak the son of Abinoam out of Kadesh Naphtali, and said unto him, Hath not the Lord God of Israel commanded, saying, Go and draw toward Mount Tabor, and take with thee 10,000 men of the children of Naphtali, and of the children of Zebulun, and I will draw unto thee to the river Kishon Sisera, the captain of Jabin's army, and his chariots and his multitude, and I will deliver him into thine hand. And Barak said unto her, If thou wilt go with me, then I will go. But if thou wilt not go with me, then I will not go. And she said, I will surely go with thee, notwithstanding the journey that thou takest shall not be for thine honor, for the Lord shall sell Sisera into the hand of woman. And Deborah arose and went with Barak to Kadesh. Now, you know, I say this tongue in cheek. Well, see, there's your proof. A woman could be a preacher or a pastor or, you know, fill in the blank. Because, look, there's Deborah. Well, it's, you know, it doesn't say that, number one, here. You know, so don't, you know. But anyways, and you know I'm not going to say it. Number one, I'll just say this. We just read verse 1, 2, and 3. You find out reading verse 1, 2, and 3 while she's judging Israel. She obviously isn't doing that good of a job. You know, she's not like Ehud. It says in chapter 4, verse 1, the children of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord when Ehud was dead. See, when a man, here's the real judge, when he's doing it, they're not doing right until the guy's gone. Or they are doing right until the guy's gone. And she's not judging as good as Ehud was judging. I mean, there she is sitting under the palm tree and everybody's still, you know, doing wrong while she's, you know, ostensibly, you know, judging everybody. Chapter 3, verse 11, it says, And the land had rest 40 years, and Othniel, the son of Kenaz, died. And the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord. See Othniel there? See, while he's judging, everybody's kind of toeing the line until the guy dies. Number one, that's a big difference between the real judge and this woman that just judged Israel. You know, you can judge something and not be a judge. That makes sense? You know, it doesn't say, and Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, she judged Israel at that time. So I don't know if I'd actually say she's judging. Like, there's women that preach. I've been in the world long enough, there's women out there preaching. I wouldn't dare call them a preacher. Right? Does that make sense? Does everybody see the difference? See the difference when a guy actually is judging. You know, he is a judge, and opposed to here's a woman just sitting under a tree judging. And there's another difference. She's not as good as. And notice this too. Look at Judges 3, verse 9. And the children of Israel cried unto the Lord. And the Lord raised up a deliverer to the children of Israel who delivered them. Even Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother. So they had to cry unto the Lord. And the Lord, here's the first guy, Othniel, God raised him up. Remember Ehud? Eglon, king of Mesopotamia, shows up. Verse 15. When the children of Israel cried unto the Lord raised them up a deliverer, Ehud, the son of Gera, a Benjamite, a man left-handed, and by him the children of Israel sent the present unto Eglon, the king of Moab. See, there's a difference. Somebody's just judging Israel, and you got these other two guys that came before. I mean, it specifically tells you God raises them up. They deliver the people, and then they judge the people. And the people are doing good, you know, while these men are alive, actually, you know, judging. You know, we'll get to Barak here in a minute. I'll just mention this, though. Barak, if you read Hebrews 11, you know, we mention all the time, all these people that show up in Hebrews 11, they'd be like, I'm surprised this guy's in there. Barak's one of them people that shows up in Hebrews 11, and you might be surprised to find him. Here's that we just read it. He says, God wants you to go to war. He says, well, I'll only go if you go with me, Deborah. You know, forget the fact he's got 10,000 guys with him. We'll get to this in a minute. He says, but if you go with me, lady, I'll go. You know, And I mentioned all that. Barak is in Hebrews 11. This woman isn't. That's something to get before you go hang yourself on the fact that, well, a woman can pastor a church just like any man can. Look, there's Deborah in the Bible. Deborah's not quite up to snuff with everybody else so far in Judges. You know, like I said, I think Barak gets a bad rap. Look at verse 6. And she sent and called Barak, the son of Abinoam of Kadesh Naphtali, and said unto him, hath not the Lord God of Israel commanded, saying, go and draw toward Mount Tabor, and take with thee 10,000 men, the children of Naphtali, and of the children of Zebulun, and I will draw unto thee to the river Kishon. Sisera, the captain of Jabin's army, and his chariots, and his multitude, and I will deliver him into thine hand. See, he tells you, God says, you go here, guess who's coming? Sisera, and his multitude, and his chariots. By the way, it's those chariots that made him call out to God. It says, and the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, for he had 900 chariots of iron. That's what makes him call out. Oh, them chariots are bad news. And now he says, Deborah's telling him, hey, and I bet she probably is a prophet. And Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth. By the way, when you're reading the Bible, waiting to get into this, when there's a genuine prophetess, it's always associated with a man, whether it's her husband or her brother. I think there's two husbands and one brother. You know, Miriam's connected with Aaron. She's connected with her husband here. So, you know, I'm not slighting her as a prophetess, but here's the point. She's saying to him, you go over here. God's going to draw Sisera to you. He's going to come with his multitude and those chariots. And, you know, and like I said, here's the worst guy they've seen. Like I said, I think Barak gets a little bit of unfair, a little bit too harsh a criticism. I bet it's easy to be scared. You know what I think? I think sometimes you just need a little bit of encouraging. You know, you tell a guy, well, you know, you ought to try to witness. How much? Well, I couldn't do it all by myself. Go out, you know, encourage a guy, help him, and then, you know, at a certain point, though, you need to just grow up and stand on your own. You know, I don't know, one of the kids, I don't know, we were talking about something, you know, let us play the man for our people. There, you know, I said, yeah, you're scared, just suck it up, and just, you know, the expression on the streets is fake it till you make it. So it gets a little bit of encouraging. But then, like I said, but then don't be too stupid about it. Like I say, he's got 10,000 men. He says, I'll go if you go with me, Deborah. He shouldn't have to have Deborah to go with him. Yeah, get a little bit of encouragement, you know, get a little bit of comfort, whatever. And then, you know, get to a point, you know, staying on your own. Now, I'll tell you, as far as it goes, I mean, I don't know if there's something to it or not. Jabin and Sisera are from way up north. And Barak's from way down south. I don't know if there's something to it or not. Maybe it is. I don't know. But the point being is, well, this guy Sisera is coming with his multitudes and with his chariots. And you got 10,000 men, which I'll just tell you, by the way, the next guy we're going to really look at in detail is Gideon. You know, everybody remember how many men Gideon had? I bet Gideon would have loved to have 10,000 men with him. You know, he's got 300, right, when he goes down. I mean, you know. So, and then he said, that's the point. Don't be stupid. Don't go too far with it. Yeah, get a little bit of encouragement, maybe a little bit of comfort, a little bit of a pep talk, but, you know, don't take it too far. You know, false balance is an abomination of the Lord, the Bible tells you, right? Verse 8, you know, like I said, he's got 10,000 men, and he says, well, if you go with me. Yeah, like I said, you already got the 10,000. And so, you know, so I think he deserves some ridicule, probably not as much as the fundamentalist brethren like to give him. Like I said, it's natural to be scared. I don't know this, by the way. How old do you think Barak is? I don't know, but I'm just assuming. What do you think? He's 30, mid-30s maybe? Say he's 35, and this guy, Sisera and Jabin, have been mightily oppressing these people for 20 years. You know, if he's 35, that is, you know, that's a big chunk of his life. But really, most of what he remembers of life is being mightily oppressed by these people. The point being is, I think he's probably young-ish, you know, somewhere in there. He probably doesn't know too much. Probably most of his life been suffering, you know, under Sisera. Maybe he doesn't remember, like I said, maybe he doesn't remember any other way. You know, how many of the, and this is something to think about too. How many of the brethren that criticize Barak, you know, have a wife that encourages them and comforts them? You know, says, oh, you can do it, honey, this kind of thing. You know, it's, the Bible says this, you know, before you get too big for your britches, God says a long time ago, it is not good that man should be alone. So what does he say next? I will make an helpmeet for him. He's got work to do in the garden. It ain't good for him to try it by himself. I'll make somebody to help get it done. Who's he make? A woman. You know, meaning Adam's not as big and bad, as self-sufficient as you want to think that he was. And I'll tell you this, as far as Adam goes. The devil knew the power that woman has over the man, by the way. Who does the devil speak to? The woman. Who's the real target in Genesis 3? I'll give you a hint. It really wasn't the woman he was after. Who is he really after? He wants Adam. Because why spend time talking to the woman? Because he knows that woman's got a lot of power over the man. Now, I'll just show you this. Look at Proverbs 14, verse 1. I'll get Hebrews 10:25. Maybe. I was hoping I'd get there quicker. Are you guys looking for Proverbs? But Proverbs 14:1, it says, "Every wise woman buildeth her house, but the foolish pluggeth it down with her hands." You know what I get from that? I think a woman's got more power in her house than, you know, the fundamentalist brother might believe that she does. It says, "Every wise woman buildeth her house, but the foolish pluggeth it down with her hands." A wise woman buildeth her house. You know, we use this word in the New Testament. Preach the word, be instant in season, reprove, rebuke, exhort. That word exhort is the positive part. You know, you didn't know this by now. Reprove, rebuke. Reprove, rebuke. Negative, negative. Exhort, positive. You know what exhort means? Like comfort, encourage, you know, kind of motivate. You know, it's kind of like build them up. Reprove them, rebuke them, you know, build them up. And it's like I said, it's the positive part of preaching. That's why, incidentally, I wanted Hebrews 10:25. He says, "Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching." So the church people, you know what they ought to be doing with each other? Exhorting. Not reproving, rebuking, exhort, building each other up. Now, what it says here is, "Every wise woman buildeth her house." Like I said, we use the word in New Testament, we talk about exhorting. A wise woman builds her house, the foolish woman pluggeth it down. I know you know this in Proverbs. You know, Proverbs, Solomon's the wisest man that ever lives. And he talks in real black and white. There is not the kind of foolish woman or the sort of wise woman, it's she's one or the other. She's wise or she's foolish. If you're kind of lazy or you're sort of diligent, you're lazy. There's nothing in between. It's one or the other. So here's this woman. Proverbs is all or nothing. She's either building her house or she's tearing it down. Like I said, you know, the fundamentalist, you know, but here it is. That's a fact. You can't beat it with a stick. The Bible says, "Every wise woman builds her house, but the foolish pluggeth it down with her hands." And it's normal for Barak, a man, to go to a woman for comfort and encouragement. A dude just doesn't comfort you. I'll just tell you, we've talked before. God, what? Comforteth like a mother and pitieth like a father. You know, a kid gets hurt, who does he run to and you know, hug on? Not his dad, unless his mom's not home. I'll just tell you, tell me you're sick. Go ahead. "Oh, I'm sick." Oh, you're sick, huh? I'll tell my wife you're sick. Not to be mean. And like, my first thought is, I hope you don't give it to me, whatever it is. You know, I don't comfort much. I'm just not a real hubby, luggy, you know, dude. You know, so I just think that's normal. You know, God, like I said, comforted like a mother, pitieth like a father. And, you know, you get the problem. And the problem in the story is this. It is normal for a dude to run to a woman to get some comfort and encouragement. You know, don't go overboard. That's his other problem. He goes overboard with it. You know, get a little bit and then, you know, man up and go about your business. The other problem, though, look at Judges 4, verse 4. It's getting late here. We'll have to hurry up and get through this. Judges 4, verse 4, it says, "And Deborah, prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth." Who's Lapidoth? I don't know. Not Barak. That's the point. That's all you need to know is she's Mrs. Deborah Lapidoth, not Mrs. Deborah Barak. You know. Here's the real question. Then you read Judges 4. Where is Mrs. Barak? I don't know. Every wise woman buildeth her house. So what's he doing running to some other man's wife for, you know, comfort and encouragement to go do what he's got to do? You know, I'll just tell you, we'll hurry up. Look at Proverbs 5. This struck me a while back. Proverbs 5, look at verse 16. He says, let thy fountains be dispersed abroad and rivers of waters in the streets. Let them be only thine own and not strangers with thee. Let thy fountains be blessed and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Let her be as the loving hind and pleasant roe. Let her breast satisfy thee at all times and be thou ravished always with her love. Those fountains and waters are your kids. You know, you don't have to have, you know, kids living with his mom over here and his stepmom over there. You know, you ought to just, you and your wife ought to live together, raise your kids together. The kids living in your house should be your kids. Your kids should be living in your house, not in some other jerk's house that's now married to your ex-wife. That's kind of the, you know, modern, well, that's what he's talking about. Then he says, verse 19, let her be as the loving hind and pleasant roe. Let her breast satisfy thee at all times and be thou ravished always with her love. So if the man's to be ravished always with her love, I mean, I think, you know, the woman's to remember to be, quote unquote, ravishing. And here's the problem. If she doesn't ravish him, look at verse 20. And why wilt thou, my son, be ravished with a strange woman and embrace the bosom of a stranger? So, you know, and I'm not saying it's an excuse for a guy to go out and, you know, pound the pavement looking for a new wife. But I'll just tell you, by the way, I don't think the guy in Proverbs 5 is out looking for a strange woman. The strange woman's out looking for him. And by the way, how does she hook him in the first place? Remember, every wise woman built their house? You know, I think that's real close to, you know, exhort. Proverbs 5, verse 3, for the lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil. You know, it all starts with her flattering. You know, she's telling him that, you know, the good stuff he should be hearing at the house, but he, you know, doesn't hear anymore. You know, point being, you know, Proverbs 5, he doesn't go out looking for her. She's looking for him. And, you know, I think the woman in Proverbs 5:19 wasn't as ravishing as she ought to have been. You know, the old expression is takes two to tango. You know, not just to leave it there and just, you know, talk about the woman, you know, Proverbs 14 and Proverbs 5. It goes a lot of ways. If you don't teach your kids, guess what? There's some other jerk out there looking to teach your kids something. If you don't put out good doctrine, guess what? Someone's going to be out there putting out doctrine. You know, that's, you know, and on it goes. If you're not doing, someone else is going to be doing. So that's what I think, you know, reading Judges 5, you know, yeah. You know, like I said, Barrett gets a bad rap, but I get... Last time reading through the thing, well, where's Mrs. Barrett? Why is he hanging out under the tree with this other guy's wife? Something's amiss here. And then we'll get to the rest of the story. Like I said, it's getting late. We'll close. Jordan, why don't you stand and dismiss for us, please?